Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening.
You're listening to On Air with Russell of Hotels, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to On Air with Russell of Hotels, where we talk about everything hospitality, from hotels to influencers and everything in between. We will feature guest interviews with hospitality professionals who will share their experiences. Your host, Russell Edmond, has spent over 25 years in the hospitality industry, beginning his career with Marriott International in hotel operations, before moving into the sales arena and becoming a relationship-building director of sales and marketing. Russell then went to the other side as a hospitality entrepreneur. He now consults in the hotel and meeting space, which includes being the CEO of Russell of Hotels Group. Did I mention he was a veggie foodie? Yes, Russell is always looking for good non-meat eats. Please welcome your host, Russell Edmond.
Hello, and thank you for joining On Air with Russell of Hotels. I do appreciate you joining me. Okay, today is, dare I say it, happy election day. Happy, hopefully by 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, it will be a happy election day. If not, I don't know. But anyway, today is Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020, and it is election day. So make sure you go out and use the power of your vote. So that's basically all I got to say about that at this point. I voted like 2 months ago, so I'm good. So, all right, they'll have to brave the lines and all that kind of stuff. So, we did that, like I said, 2 months ago. So, but anyway, once again, thank you again for joining On Air with Russell of Hotels. We're a live radio show, just in case you did not know. A live radio. We're on LA Talk Radio. We're Zoom and we're Facebook Live. So we're the number one show that does all that. Okay. Just in case you didn't know that. And I think Victor didn't know that either. I think he thought he was coming on some two-bit show, but no, we're not about that. Okay, we're about being professional, and we're about making some things happen here. So we want to thank LA Talk Radio and everybody that I mentioned for having their platforms available for us. And we're about connecting people in collaboration. So today, in case you didn't know, I have someone here, my guest, show number 81, Mr. Victor Simmons. He's a Vice President of HR, Human Resources, Diversity, Equality, and Inclusion. I mean, that's a big title. But we're going to formally introduce you, Victor. I mean, this is your second time on the show, but this is the first time on a live Zoom. You did basically a podcast. You did only the podcast, if I'm correct. You did
conference call.
Yeah, you did a conference call, and it's funny, it was over a year ago now, and I was going to Oakland. I was in Oakland. I just flew in. I just landed, and we did the interview, You were in New Jersey. I was at the terminal at Oakland Airport, and it outside the terminal, so it actually worked out okay, though. That was probably one of the better shows, so. And, you know, you were a trooper. You bear through it. So I do appreciate you coming on again, because now you have a new position, right? So people don't know this. So, we're going to get into all that, though, and, you know, how we know each other and all this stuff, just to refresh people that don't know you or didn't hear you the first time you're on the show. But I'm glad you're here. And like I said, Victor and I have known each other for, I don't want to, if I say too much, then they may think we're too old. They're like, how do they know about this stuff? Did they have hotels back then? But yeah, so Victor and I have known, we went to school together. Okay. So, anyway, we're going to get to that in a minute. We're going to get to that. So once again, show number 81, Mr. Victor Simmons, VP of HR, Diversity, Equality, and Inclusion for Ace Hotels. So just in case you didn't know, look above me, Ace Hotels. That's Ace Hotels DTLA, which is downtown Los Angeles. In fact, Victor and I were just there last week, and he bought me a beverage. You know, believe it or not, he bought me a beverage. So, of course, I have to, you know, he's from Ace Hotels. I have to, you know, represent Ace Hotels for Victor today. But anyway, getting to some industry news. Hey, did you guys know due to this whole COVID thing, you know, people traveling in RVs, RV travel is on the rise. You know, people are renting RVs and, you know, they're getting away, you know, because of space and distance and all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, who would have thought? What do you think about that, Victor?
I think they should stay in hotels. That's what I think. I think they should, you know, drive wherever they're going, pull over and stay in a hotel. You want my preference? That's what I think.
So you're not taking the RV route. So that's not you.
I need a bellman. Right. I need valet, room service.
One thing about Victor, boy, I tell you, wait a minute, hold on. People are texting me as I'm, you know, on the show, right? And they, you know, they always want to make their little comments anyway, but this is not a bad comment. Ms. Cheryl Rogers, thank you so much for, you know, keeping me on my toes. But Victor, as you can see, you know, Victor, and this is one thing I learned about Victor early on, you know, back in the day, you know, he expects a lot. You know, he expects things to be, you know, top notch all the time. Doesn't matter. Okay. I just remember back in the day, we played football together. We went to school together. And Victor used to get us in the country clubs and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it wasn't like we went through the front gate though. We kind of navigated our way through, but Victor knew all the country clubs that we can get into in the Palm Springs area and stuff like that. And we would utilize their jacuzzis and things like that. So that was Victor. I mean, it was the early on there, and this man did, you know, first tier, top tier things in any situation. So anyway, I just had to throw that in there. Let's see. Okay. So I said RV travel is risen, and I'm not going to be doing that either. So I'm with you on that one, Victor. So I'm all for bougie camping, you know what I mean? Where they have bellmen and towels and running water and all that stuff. No, I don't need to rough it, if you will. That's roughing it as far as I'm concerned anyway. Budget season. I know hotels are in budget seasons. Well, they probably started that back in May. You know, it seemed like every year it became earlier and earlier. But my question is, and this is something that my last job as a DOS for 4 years ago, I put in like a line item of social media exposure. I mean, like, you know, were we spending money on social media and things like that? And those, even 4 years ago, hotels weren't even doing that stuff, right? They're probably not doing it now. So my question is, and Victor, I mean, I don't know how involved you are in budgets, but if you know something, let me know. But is that a line item? Do people put that in, you know, in their budgets, you know, for social media, branding, exposure, you know, things that set your hotel apart from your comp set? Do they do
we
that?
Do. Yeah, we do. Roles, I don't believe that was, but that is a big part of what we do with Ace. We have a social media, you know, person designated to do that, as well as a marketing person. So that work hand in hand. In fact, we just merged those two roles together. So social media is a big part of what we do.
Okay. Very good. See, I knew you would know that, Victor, the VP of HR. You should know this stuff, right? So I had some homework for Victor to do, right? So in the world of LinkedIn, what is your SSI number? I've been asking this for the last 3 weeks since I discovered this whole SSI number, which stands for Social Selling Index. And Victor thought he was off the hook because I emailed him the link, and he said, well, this is for salespeople. I don't need to do this. I said, no, Victor. I need you to do this, and I need you to share your score with me. So, Victor, can you share your score with me?
Well, now I got to
just share the score. It's a big number. Hopefully, it's in the 70s.
It wasn't yesterday, but, you know, I had to go online and post something real quick so I could, you know, make sure I get it up there. So, I'm refreshing it right now as we speak. So that I can see what the score was, because I wasn't happy with the score. No, it's still the same. So yesterday
it's not going to change.
63.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Victor's yeah. 60, which means basically everybody's not getting in the 70s, okay? So basically what it is, it just basically gives it measures the impact of your social selling efforts with LinkedIn and how effective you are at establishing your professional brand. Okay, so my score, my dashboard, I'm at 71 out of 100. Okay, so I'm at 71. I'm in the top 1% of the industry SSI rank. So people that are within my industry, I'm at the top 1%. And then I'm at the top 3% of all my network. So if I have 26,000 people, which that's what I do have, 26,000 people in my network, I'm at the top 3% of that. So, I mean, it's not the end all be all, but it's basically, it's a report card, right? Just like for hotels, you know, they have a star report, right? So it's basically, how do you equate, you know, how do you compare to your competition? Well, I'm looking at how do I compare to other brands or the people that have taken this score, other people within the industry. So, and man, I would be disappointed if I was not in the 70s. I should be in the 80s, but I know I need work, right? And then Michelle Carlin, who's been on the show a couple of times, she was on a couple of weeks ago, she texted me and said, guess what I got? She got a 73. I'm like, what? I think she said 70, 73 or 75. I can't remember what it was, but it was over mine. So I said, okay, I got some work to do because I'm not letting no one beat me, okay? At least people I know, right? So.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to jump in right now because this is taking me back to like 8 years ago when we had like 200 people on LinkedIn trying to get to 500 and I smoked you and now you're getting back at me with this SSI thing, whatever it is. I hadn't even heard about it until 16 hours ago. So give me some time to work on that, okay?
Okay. Well, can I just ask you how many LinkedIn connections do you have now?
I have about 4,600.
Okay, good. Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I remember, we were in competition. Like you had, I think you were over me. You had like 500. I had like 250. But then now I got 26,000, Victor. So just so you know, FYI. Yes. So not a big deal.
Well aware. I was so happy to get the 500. And then 2 years later, I looked at your Twitter and saw how many were following you on Twitter. And I have like, four. So.
No big deal. No big deal. I mean, I work at it, so I should have it on there. But regardless of if you're sales, if you're HR, if you're putting a message out and you want people to see it, you need more people out there and you need to have a higher score because obviously the people that maybe that are connected to you may not be the right people to be connected to. But anyway, that's what I get from that. But like I said, it's not the end all be all, but it's just one of those tools that we use to measure ourselves, especially in the world of social media. And I do a lot of social media stuff. So of course that's, I take it kind of serious, but that's just me, but I'm gonna make fun about it anyway. What is your hotel open? Or did you go back to work? I mean, these are questions that I ask every week because I need you to create some FOMO. Victor, do you know what FOMO is?
No, I do not.
Oh my God. I have to say, I've asked this 3 weeks in a row and the other two people knew and you didn't. Okay.
Wow. Wow. Okay, I remember all these texts. Yeah, it would really be great to have you on the show. Now I see why you got me on here. Okay.
No.
What exactly is FOMO, Russell?
FOMO stands for, it's a hashtag. Hashtag fear of missing out. FOMO.
Obviously, so. I'm not concerned about that. I'm not concerned.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I think it's important that, hotels, let's say the Ace Hotel downtown LA was closed for a period of time because of COVID, right? So, and then now they just reopened, say 3 weeks ago, and they want, throw this huge media campaign, social media campaign or whatever. And one of the hashtags you probably would use is, fear missing out. So anyone that would look at a hashtag FOMO, they would see the Ace Hotel, all the pictures and people people having fun. They're at the rooftop bar having a beverage and things like that. And you would want people to, okay, when you send out a picture on Twitter, on Instagram or whatever, you want to hashtag FOMO. Then that way people will see it and say, oh, well, shoot, Russell's over there at the Ace Hotel having a drink. You know, I've never been to a hotel before. I'm going to go check that out. You know, that's what fear of missing out is about. It's like creating a demand where there's no demand. Let's just say that, right? Or creating some excitement, some, you know, people want to go. Now, all of a sudden, people want to go check out the Ace Hotel downtown and maybe have a drink. And, you know, you want to put in that they're being, you know, they're social distancing and all that kind of stuff, like, which we did last week, right? So they're only taking... They only took you and I up on the air elevator. They checked our temperature. They did all these things, right? So those are things that, like last week after we had a cocktail, I did the same thing. I sent out, you know, Instagram, Twitter or whatever, and I put hashtag FOMO, and I made sure I said they are using social distancing and they're taking temperatures. You know, elevator is limited to just the people in your party and things like that. So I mean, those things are important, right? So boom. That's it.
Well, drop you. At my next staff meeting, I'll be sure to pull that out with my head of marketing.
Okay. Well, there you go. See, that's what I'm here to do, Victor. I'm here to help you. I mean, that's the, you know, we've been helping each other for years. So, you know, today's no different. Social media usage is up by 7 minutes over 2019. I don't know if you knew that, but people are now spending 7 more minutes on social media. I mean, as if, you know, almost 24 hours a day wasn't enough. Now they, you know, they're 7 more minutes, 24 hours and 7 minutes on social media. So so what does that mean? I mean, so is this part of your market strategy? So if you knew this, what would you do? Would you oh boy, people are, like I said, now people are chiming in. Now my sister is chiming in on Michelle has 75. Okay. She has 75. Okay. Well, thanks, Marsha, for the information. So I really have some work to do because, like I said, I only have 71. So I have some work to do. But yeah, if spending 7 more minutes and you're the director of marketing or whatever for that particular hotel, what would be your market strategy if you knew you had 7 more minutes or people were spending 7 more minutes on social media? Just a little, you know. I mean, that's up to people to say what they would do. I'm just throwing it out there because that's the information that I get, right? Not meat eats. You guys all know that I don't eat meat. You know, I used to back in the day, right, Victor? We all used to eat a lot of meat, right? But I don't anymore. But I'm all about mushrooms now. I got this whole tray of mushrooms in the refrigerator that I'm going to cook up today, and I'm going to make taco mushrooms. So there you go. Yeah. And these are shiitakes, I believe. These are shiitake mushrooms. So I'm gonna slice them up, saute them. It's gonna be like mushroom fajitas. Okay. So I'm gonna hook it up. But anyway, this is another question. I asked this last week, and a couple people had chimed in and on the, you know, during the week and said, I do this. So why do people view your LinkedIn profile in a private mode? That was something I mentioned last week. And like today, I got like 5 people that are looking at my profile on a private mode. I'm like, well, why are they doing that? Who are these people and why are they doing it? You know, but anyway, it's just a question. It's one of those things that make you, okay. Are we reinventing ourselves? Are we swerving? I mean, swerving is, just in case you didn't know, Victor, swerving is the word that I use instead of using the P word, which everyone is using pivoting, right? Mm-hmm. So I use swerving. Okay. So I'm not trying to be like everybody else. I'm trying to be like me. The best way to predict the future is to invent it. My contact information, if you want to reach me, russell@russellofhotels.com. That is my email. I'm not going to go through everything else because I got to get to this interview right quick. What is Russell of Hotels Group? Basically, radio show hosts interview today's hospitality professionals like my man Victor Simmons here. I'm in the branding, digital marketing via social media, build your brand presence through videos, postings, etc. Some of the things we just talked about a little while ago. Collaboration and connecting of people. Today's no different. I mean, I'm collaborating with Mr. Simmons about what he's doing and his take on all this stuff that's going on, social injustice and all that kind of stuff. So this is one of those shows today, you know, we're going to get into it. There's going to be some stuff in here that, you know, I have to ask, right? Because Victor's a guy to ask, right? You know, so I have to ask some of these questions. So, hey, it's all right. Ain't the end of the world. Couple questions I always ask everyone, and these are just questions for you to ask or think about. How's your professional or personal brand staying relevant? Knowing what you know now, meaning the whole COVID thing, is there anything you would have done differently or that you're doing differently because of what has happened? Have you connected with anyone new lately? Because that's what we need to do, because people have lost jobs, moved on, whatever. You need to connect with those people, especially if you're a meeting planner and you were planning something at this one particular hotel. Chances are the person that you were talking to is not there anymore. So you need to pick up the phone, stop emailing people and pick up the phone. And what has this situation taught you? Quick shout out to Professor Leslie Butler, Collins College of Hospitality Management at Cal Poly Pomona. Victor knows her. She every now and then I'll instant message her and see how she's doing. And she said, "Oh, I'm doing fine." You know, every now and then I listen to, sometimes I listen to your show, basically sometimes you don't, right? And I said, "Oh, okay. Well, Victor's going to be on the show this week." She goes, "Oh, I'll tune in then." Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll see. We'll see, Leslie. But shout out to her. She's a professor at the Collins College of Hospitality Management, and she's been on the show. So she's a supporter of On Air with Russell Hotels. Thank you again to Miss Sarah Good, travel and cruise expert, travel documentary creator, director. She was my guest last week. And I have to say, out of all the people that have been on the show, she had created the most buzz for whatever reason. I had over 4,000 people that had watched that video from last week. Over 4,000. Can you believe that? So, Victor, you got some shoes to fill, dude. So I'm just letting you know.
I'm at 63 on my SSI score. I don't know.
So, William Simmons, Vice President of HR and Diversity, Equality, and Inclusion for Ace Hotels. Victor has led teams in operation and HR for global hotel companies for 25 plus years. That just tells you how long we know each other. We actually know each other longer than that, but that's okay. As a HR practitioner, Victor is deeply engaged in all facets of the employee experience while being an operations minded business partner to his leadership team. Victor's most previous role was the Director of Diversity and Inclusion for Wyndham Hotels and Resorts. While there, he leveraged affinity business groups, programming, and the social responsibility aspirations in the design and implementation of a global D&I strategy. Victor recently joined, and I hope I say this right, Atelier Ace as the VP of HR and head of diversity, equity, and inclusion, where he is working across all properties as well as the corporate office to build a DEI strategy with accountability, authenticity that will ensure they are successful in making their workplace a safe and welcoming environment for all team members and guests. Without further ado, I'm out of breath. Victor Simmons, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, I'm glad. So, I mean, tell me, how'd you get in this industry, Victor?
I was a business ad major, this story, in San Diego.
Everyone on the show doesn't know the story, Victor.
And trying to figure out what I was going to do. I was struggling in San Diego, living there all by myself, and I was having a conversation with you. You were CIS, Computer Information Systems, and you were about to transfer to Cal Poly, right, in hospitality. And I didn't realize they had a hospitality program at Cal Poly. And so I figured the thing I enjoyed most was when I worked in hotels and restaurants. And I figured I'd get my business administration degree and get into hotels. But when I heard that they had this hospitality program, I jumped into that. I moved back to Palm Springs and I went back to work at the hotel I was working at, La Quinta Resort and Club. And I tried to work in as many departments as I could while I was going to school. And I commuted from the desert to Cal Poly until I graduated. And once I graduated, La Quinta took me on, not necessarily because I got my degree, to be quite frank. It was because I wasn't in school and they could put more hours on me. And I moved into events and things just took off from there.
Yeah, Victor, one thing about Victor, I mean, I have a lot of respect for anyone that will, I mean, he's still working full time at the La Quinta Hotel or golf and tennis resort. And he was a full time student.
And he was dad.
And he did not live in Pomona. He lived in Palm Springs, which means he drove 2 hours, you know, at least 2 hours to school to attend his classes and then would drive back that same night because he had to work the next day. So, I mean, you talk about dedication and someone that was getting after it and wasn't going to take no for an answer. And someone that was, you talk about like a pit bull that, you know, perseverance, you know what I mean? They don't give up. I mean, that was Victor. So, I mean, I've always respected that. And I tend to forget, you know, the sacrifices you made by driving back and forth. But, I mean, you made it happen. So, but yeah, and it was only, how many of us were in that program at that time? Us.
How many of us? How many black folks?
Yes.
Well, between you, me, and Leslie? Well, wait a minute. I think that's it.
that was it, Victor. It was Suzanne was in there too, but Leslie came in a little after us, right? So when we first got into program, it was only you, myself, and Suzanne. Suzanne. Yeah. And then Leslie came in. So which made four. Okay, so there you go. But and guess what? It ain't changed much now. So but anyway, but we were gonna get into that. Okay, who was Ace Hotels? Give me the rundown on Ace Hotels.
What is it? Who what?
Who is Ace Hotels? What is Ace Hotels?
Okay. Atelier Ace. You know, it's interesting. This gentleman named Alex Calderwood was a guy that was in marketing, and as I understand this, you know, I might have just made my 90 days. I might just be hitting 90 days here. So let me see if I got this right. Alex, who was the founder of Atelier, was in marketing, and he also enjoyed, you know, those music festivals. And he was in Seattle, and he wanted to find a place where the folks that were in this marketing space and folks that were in the music festival space. And he was one of the first pioneers of that guerrilla marketing where you would see at music festivals. And he wanted a place where people could come together. And he took over this halfway house in Seattle for his friends that were in, you know, that were, and he turned it into a hotel. And from there, they had friends that would come to the Seattle property that wanted to do the same thing. And they opened up another Ace in Portland. And then from there, Alex wanted to continue on and open up Aces across the country. He got with some other, and the two that started out that the properties in Seattle and Portland, they didn't really want to do that. They were fine with their hotels, but Alex wanted to create more across the country. And so he got with a couple of other partners and they went out and, you know, were up around 10 properties right now with, you know, we have a property in Brooklyn, a property in Toronto that are going to be opening up in Q1, Q2. What drew me to, one of the things that drew me to this company is there's one in Japan, which is actually doing very well. And we had a property in London, which is currently, you know, due to COVID, currently closed down right now, but we have about seven properties that are currently up and running, you know, full steam ahead, trying to get through.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you for that story about Ace Hotel. Hey, give me the importance of D&I. Explain that.
Well, oh yeah. You know, I wanted to correct you on the title there, bro. Earlier you had said, cause I think this is important for our listeners. You know, earlier you had said diversity, equality, and inclusion, and it is diversity, equity, and inclusion, and there is a difference. First, though, diversity and inclusion, this is the way I like to explain it. Think about, you know, I'm into salsa dancing, right?
And, yes.
The last party I did in the desert was with my wife. And we invited all of our salsa friends, salsa dancing friends, which is a very diverse group to begin with. You know, typically when you're on the outside, you think, oh, it's you know, Latinx people that are in that. No, it's very diverse, first of all. And then, you know, I invited a number of my friends that are from the First Friday events, which is predominantly Black folks that I invited to this event. And then, you know, I dabbled a little bit, not in politics, but I dabbled with meeting politicians in the desert. So I invited folks from that because I was building my business down there in the desert. And then my wife's friends who are not salsa dancers, I invited them. And so that's diversity. That's the mix. There's a whole lot of different folks. Inclusion is when I talk to the DJ for playing music, I didn't want to just play salsa music because there's a lot of different individuals there. They're not just into salsa music. So I made sure that we had, you know, R&B music. I made sure that we had different styles of reggaeton and cumbia that a large community, particularly Mexican, that enjoy that music. And we rotated that throughout the night. And so that's inclusion, where you feel like you belong. And that way the party continues to keep going because it's not just one genre of music that's playing. So it's diversity, a large group of a large variety of people. Inclusion is making all of that work and making that people feel that they belong. Where equity comes in, equality is really about the same for everybody. So if I just played the same music, that's not going to work for everybody. Where in my home out in the backyard where we had the dance floor was out on that raised platform next to the pool, right? Which takes its three steps to get up to the dance floor. But I also had in my living room on the ground level, I had a dance floor in there. That's where it's equitable for those, because I did know that I had some folks in my group that used a wheelchair for access. So those that wanted to be able to partake and still be able to go out there feeling the music can be able to do that, because I had folks dancing in the living room on the ground level, and I had a whole bunch of folks out around the pool for that matter that could do that, and or those that went up on the stage to be able to dance. That's where equity comes in. So that's a little bit of analogy to what diversity, equity, and inclusion is all about.
Wow. Now that I've never heard it explained like that. Now, do you explain that? Is that the same analogy that you use for when you're doing seminars with Ace Hotels?
Yeah, yeah. We do a session called Leading Inclusive Teams, and I absolutely do share that, because it particularly, you know, I'm new to the company and I wanted people to know a little bit about me. And so it was, you know, it's kind of interesting to know that I'm a salsa dancer, and then also putting it into terms that makes it easy. I know you didn't want to go here, but I'm going to talk about Trump for 27 seconds and talk about how he has with this, when we're talking about unconscious bias, or we're talking about diversity and inclusion, and those seem to be trigger words. And so to me, this is a way to be able to explain it in a way that makes sense for individuals, you know, on a day-to-day basis. You can connect the dots when you talk about it that way.
Hmm. I like that. I like that. I'm sure everybody like that. Shit, shoot. I mean, that's all I can say. Yeah, you got me on the show cussing. I never cussed before. I had to catch myself. Wow. No, that's good. I love that. What's the importance of D&I? What is the importance of it? Not just for our industry, and touch on our industry first, but, you know, every industry.
Well, I think, yeah, if you talk about our industry, it is widely known. When you go into any hotel in the U.S., you see a whole lot of people of color, you know, cooking and cleaning and serving. You see a lot of folks of color at entry-level positions. And then if you were to work there and you were to be a manager there, you will notice that there's a lot of people of color at the bottom level. And then as you move up in the company, there are fewer and fewer and fewer up at the top. And so why I believe it is important, and why actually largely in part to why I'm in the role I'm in today, is because as a you know, as an HR director, I've always been a champion of diversity and inclusion. And I did a lot of programming around that because I was always trying to give back and help people move up. And at the end of the day, just like we want our customers, we want our workforce to match our customers. We have a very diverse, you know, there's every shape and color that walks in the door that needs a place to raise their head, place their head at night. It's a very diverse group of people as customers. You want your workforce to match that. And if you want your workforce to match that, you also need your leadership to be able to match your workforce. And so to me, I think it's important that, you know, you hear this buzzword of representation matters. Yeah, representation matters. When I go and apply for jobs, when I walk into a place, whether it's the business I work in or whether it's an establishment I'm going in as a customer, I look for people that look like me. Particularly when I go into a place that I'm working at, I look for people that look like me. And our customers do the same thing. And so the same thing happens if I want to move up in the company, I'm looking for leadership that looks like me as well. That's why representation matters. There's something there that helps us understand things a certain way and be able to get things done. And we feel like we belong and we're that much more productive. When we're that much more productive, we end up having innovation and we end up making more money when that happens. Mm. So that's why it works in the industry. And I think the same thing, whether you're a customer out there, you know, that's what you're looking for. You want to feel like you belong.
I got you. Why? I'm going to read this one thing for you. There's something I just, an email I got, right? And funny, it's right before the show. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Travel Unity. It's a nonprofit organization focused on increasing diversity in the world of travel through individual and community empowerment. Okay, so in winter 2018, Travel Unity conducted a survey to find out how the travel industry saw itself in regards to DEI. Two of the biggest takeaways, many respondents themselves cared about DEI in their professional lives. They believe the organizations they worked for cared about DEI less than they did. They thought the industry at large cared less than their organizations did. Okay, so with that, I mean, just hearing that, I mean, this was 2018, Travel Unity did this, I guess, this survey. Why do you think the travel industry, or specifically hotel industry, why do you think there's less of people of color in higher positions? Why do you think that? Is it because there's no training? They don't know? What do you think that is?
Because there's not people like us at the top. I mean, just say it like it is. I mean, it's predominantly white men who are the senior leaders of these organizations, and it's tough to be able to move your way up. It's not impossible, you know, here I am today, right? But it is tough for folks to be able to make their way up. I just happened to come upon this. Actually, a colleague of mine at Wyndham sent this organization to me a week ago. And as we speak right now, my DEI council is looking at this organization to get involved. They're running a pilot to do a certification for the hospitality industry. And I think it is very interesting because, and in fact, in my email to the team, I said, hey, I got to do this thing I couldn't get out of. I got to do this call with a friend of mine. But I want you to kick the tires on this organization and check it out and have a discussion because I want to participate in the certification. Quite frankly, all the things that are on there, I think we're going to be able to do. I think that it's things that I know how to do. But what I think is interesting is that they're talking about holding the hospitality industry accountable in a number of things, not just moving people up into higher roles. That's one thing. But there's a number of other things that we need to do as an industry to make sure that it is equitable. So we're talking about compensation, which is a difficult conversation to have. When you're trying to, particularly right now, right, with COVID that's going on and you're trying to save your hotels and you're talking about making sure that everybody's getting the an equitable wage. So I don't think they have an easy road ahead of them to try to get this industry wide. I think it's going to be a challenge, But that's why I'm interested in that. And I, as I said to them, this is an opportunity to be on the ground floor of something that could be, it could be, I don't think it's a swerve. I don't think it's a pivot. I think it is where we need to be. And I like to be in the mix. I like to be involved in things that are groundbreaking and an opportunity to make a big difference. Because we've been talking about, quite frankly, we've been talking about this for a long time. We were talking about when we were in school about representation at our school, right? And so it's something that I think needs to be done. And I think we're definitely going to be involved in the pilot. And we'll see if we can take it to the next level and be a partnership and be able to help drive change in our industry. And that's what I will tell you, a quick commercial on ACE, is that they are the best that I've seen that goes into a community and they curate what's in the community. They curate what's there. They don't take it for their own. What they do is they go into a community and they take the artists, they take the culinarians, they take whatever's happening in there and make sure that that's a part of that hotel. And that's what really makes the difference. Because, you know, I will tell you, I walked into the Palm Springs Hotel just last week. You know, the guy's got on a t-shirt and hat on backwards and two pins coming out of his ears. And that's not me, right? But when I start talking and I have a conversation with this person, a lot of our customers end up working for us. A lot of folks that are working for us were customers, and they believe in what we are doing, which is caring for that community. And that's a pretty cool thing to see.
Yeah.
To see happen. So.
No, that's good. I love that. I love that. So that's good. I mean, you can walk in the door. I've only been the one ACE, and I mean, you can see the difference between. And I'm just comparing boutique to boutique. And there's definitely a different feel when you walk in, when I walk in the door of ACE than some of the other hotels I walked in that are boutiques as well. So good. I'm glad to hear that you guys are making a difference in the community. And that I think that goes a lot further than a lot of things. There was this question that I just had to ask. What am I asking? Okay. Having difficult conversations. Now, I'm sure you've had to have some difficult conversations when it comes to D&I. What do you suggest if there's a company organization that wants to, you know, start a program or at least open it up for people to start talking about social issues and things like that? Because sometimes people, well, I don't want to say the wrong thing or whatever, so they'd rather not say anything. Right. So what suggestions do you give for people maybe that don't know where to start?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why it has taken so long to get to where we are. It took everybody to be at home and see these police officers kill George Floyd right before their eyes. And it took that, everybody there to see it, and then people going out into the streets. And when you saw a wide variety of folks, usually it was predominantly people of color that were out there saying this is wrong. Now, when you see everybody out there, that starts sparking a conversation. They're not easy conversations. And the only way to have them is to simply just do it. And you need to make sure that there's, if you are an HR practitioner, if you are an operations manager, in any sort of a leadership role, you need to make sure that there are tools and resources available that give people context to be able to latch onto to have those conversations. But you just have to jump in and start having them. And I think one of the easiest way to do that, not the easiest way, but the only way to do it is to reach out to someone different than you and somebody that you have no idea anything about them. You just know one thing that has always sort of made you shy away, and you gotta invite them for a cup of coffee and sit down and have a face-to-face conversation. So you gotta start with just talking and having a discussion, and know that they're gonna be uncomfortable. And I think you have to say, I'll just use myself as an example. When I first started, I was not familiar with non-binary, and the concept or the term non-binary. In fact, I was looking at something online. I was researching a company to partner with, and the profiles of the individuals that worked there were on there, and I was reading through them, and I read somebody, and they were referring to that person as they and them. And at first, I thought it was a typo, and then as I was reading, they continue to refer to this person as they and them. And then I thought to myself, why? Oh, this must be this thing about non-binary. This was only like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I actually, my face got scrunched up and I said to myself, man, is that something else I got to learn for D&I? Is that something else I got to learn? And it hit me right in that moment that that's what people look like and sound like when they're talking about Black folks, when they're talking about me. When they are ignorant of a certain situation, and I was now doing that, and I didn't even know this person, and I have a scrunched up face, and I went online to figure that out, and I met with someone and had a series of phone calls that helped me understand that, and that's the only way I had to do it. And my first few words were, "Listen, I'm probably gonna I'm going to say this wrong. I might say something incorrectly. Please forgive me. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I'm just trying to understand. And if you're okay, I'd like to have a conversation with you." And this person absolutely was, yeah, absolutely. You know, they were used to that, and they were more caring and thoughtful than your next door neighbor who you've known for years. Right. And so it was a great conversation, and it helped me understand that particular part of a large community, for that matter, that works for us. And imagine working in a company and you are misgendering someone, you are saying things and have a scrunched up face about someone who's covering themselves because of that kind of nonsense that's going on. So that's why it's important.
Wow. That's, man, I mean, you have a lot of examples, man. You're living this. I mean, as being a Black man, and you're, like you said, you're having to learn other things about, you know, your position or other people's plights. So, I mean, I don't think I could have had anyone better on the show to talk about this, Victor. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. See, we don't talk about all this stuff, right? So, but anyway, Wow. So that's great. I'm glad to hear those things. I'm sure people like the way you put things, you explain things. And that's what it's all about. It's about, you know, being open to these conversations.
Right.
Because like you said, people, you know, you can read body language before you even get to them. Right. 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 So, I mean, we got to just be open to the dialogue. I mean, it's it. It's okay to ask those questions. People, if you want to ask me questions, call me and ask me. I mean, it's okay, right? And it's okay to get things wrong, okay? Mm-hmm. Or say things, well, because, you know, it's my job to, you know, correct you or talk more about it or explain why things are the way they are or whatever it is. I mean, but we have to do this. We have to have these uncomfortable. I mean, if I hear that phrase one more time, I'm going to freaking scream, uncomfortable. Well, we've been uncomfortable for a long time, okay? Yeah. But anyway. But we do need to have these conversations, and don't be afraid to have them. And we're speaking to somebody that's a VP of HR and DEI. So he knows. Okay. So if he's going to say it, it's okay to have those conversations, then it's okay to have a conversation. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and I would say one other thing about that helped me early on. I remember when I went from, I was in convention services and I decided to get into HR. And I went through the training program, and I was in the right place in the right time. And after I got through this training program, I was with Marriott at the time, and I got an opportunity to interview for the HR director job. Normally, you'd go in as an HR trainee or an HR manager, maybe assistant director, and I got the HR director job. And man, overnight, I became an executive committee member. And I remember meeting, it was Frank Garahan, the general manager, and he said to me, "Listen, as an HR director, you need to tell your GM the truth, whether they want to hear it or not." And that has been one of the things that has helped me be so much more successful, always telling the GM the truth, whether and or when the GM is doing something that's a problem, you have to tell them. And you get that much more respect from the general manager when you are speaking, you hear this, speaking truth to power. Well, when you do that, they give you more respect if they are a legitimate leader. If they're not and they don't want to hear it, that's not somebody you want to work for anyway. But I learned early on when I worked with Frank to be able to do that. And so I've always done that. Whenever there's something going on, I just say, hey, this is the issue. This is what the problem is. This is what you're doing wrong, or this is what's wrong with that situation. And so I've been doing that for, 20 something years now. And it's always helped me get to the next level.
I'm glad you said that, because I think I asked another HR professional. He's actually a professor at Long Beach State. I asked him something similar to what you just said. And it had to do with, HR, if you're the director of HR at that property and the GM is the one that's doing some crazy off the wall stuff, making comments or just not being an effective leader, sometimes it's a fine line, because the HR person is afraid of the GM because they think they're going to get terminated or whatever. And I've seen this so many times. In fact, I saw it at my last position, and it's one of the reasons why I was not there anymore, because there was a lot of stuff that was going on, and then no one, I mean, basically like the chicken garden, the fox garden chicken coop or whatever the heck you call it. There was no, because when you're working for an independent hotel, there's not a lot of, outside of the hotel, there's not like a corporate HR director that's going to foresee it. I mean, or is going to take it. I'm going to talk to them for you, that kind of thing. So it stops right there at the property level. So there's a lot of stuff going on that was crazy, but the HR director was so weak in his or her position that things just continued to fester and just got out of control. So
they're taking advantage of that situation. But if you let them know right now, you're not taking that mess.
Yeah.
They knock it off. But usually what I have found is that you gain that much more respect. They start coming to you, which is the role I love, is you become their counsel. They will come to you and say, hey, I was thinking about this. What do you think? Or they come to you and say, this is a problem. How do we fix it? So it's always worked out well for them.
I love it. Okay, well, we're winding down. We're not done yet, Victor, but we are. It's 1:53. We are winding down. But my questions go from hot to cold. Our professional that you are, you get a lot of resumes, right?
Yep, I do.
Okay. What on a resume will stand out? What will get that person the interview?
It depends on what the role is. It really depends. I look at what, depending on what the job is. So right now we are looking, I'll put my little plug out there. I think we already have over 600 applications for a marketing, a director of marketing role. So it would be a field marketing position. So go between the property and our atelier, the corporate team. And so in those, I was looking at what did they do in terms of their marketing roles? And I was looking whether they had hotel experience and or did they have, because Atelier is, came from, that the, PR firm, marketing firm, it has that DNA. So I was looking for someone that doesn't have not only hotels, but has also that PR firm, marketing firm, guerrilla marketing style. So if they have those two things, I'm gonna call for them. And I'll say something that people are afraid to say, but I'm gonna go ahead and say it. I also look at my organization. Anywhere I've been, in every hotel I was at, let's say it was an executive committee position. So we were looking for a director of food and beverage. I look at who's on the EC team in terms of diversity of thought, diversity itself in terms of race, diversity itself in terms of gender, and what am I missing? And then I'm looking for a guy that has, let's say we are looking for a process-oriented person. I'm looking for a guy who's process-oriented, who has X amount of food and beverage experience. That's what I'm looking for. So it always changes because it depends on you know, what's in your organization, as well as you know, what the particular role is, and then what those skills are. So skills plus who's missing, because when we have a whole bunch of different people around the table trying to make decisions, as opposed to the same like-minded, similar people, you're just going to get so much more innovation out of that. You're going to get so much more thoughts and ideas out of that.
Wow. You're an innovator yourself there, Victor. I have to say that. Wow. Okay. All right. I'd say I didn't know that. Those are things that I didn't know. Like that too, because so many of the companies that are out there, the big box hotels, the big majors, the big three, the big four, I guarantee you they don't look at things like that. But oh, you can tell. I don't even have to say that. You can tell because you can see, you know, their upper management. I mean, you can already see that. So, but it's good. I like that. So, okay. So I got 3 minutes left. We're on with Victor Simmons. He is the VP, Vice President of Human Resources and DEI. Am I saying that right?
Head. I asked for that in my offer letter. Wasn't just VP of HR and DEI. I said, I want head of in there somewhere, which is head of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Yeah.
Okay. Now, and I'm going to end. This is going to be the last question I'm going to ask. Now, that's rare, am I correct, to have HR and DEI experience? I mean, normally you have one or the other. Am I right?
Yeah, you know, they actually reached out to me a year ago, a little more than a year ago, and they were looking for a corporate HR person. They hadn't had that with this company, you know, starting out 5-6 hotels, they were starting to scale up, and they thought maybe, in fact, they're sort of corporate resistant and didn't think they needed it. Then they started, as they were, you know, adding more hotels, thought, well, maybe we should do it. And we don't have enough time to go into the details, but even though they are a very open and inclusive company, they did run into a little bit of hot water. They went out there with as many companies did, and did a, you know, Black Lives Matter solidarity post. And there were people of color that's and allies of people of color that said, I don't know if you are that in solidarity. And so they needed not only an HR person, but a DEI person as both. And so that's why I got they reached out. They actually reached out to me, and my role was eliminated with Wyndham. So we'll have to have a whole nother show to talk about that, because that's another hour in the elimination, getting to where I am, and what was going on with Atelier before I arrived. That's another show, man. That's a cliffhanger.
Oh, man. How about that the last 30 seconds? We'll have to have you back on, Victor. So I do only have less than a minute now. So. Yeah. But I do want to thank you so much for coming on the show. You gave a lot of good information that I never even thought of, you know, I guess rightfully so. I'm not in HR and D&I, so there you go. But no, I want to thank you for your time. I know you're busy. And you're just a quick location check. Where are you located?
I am in New Jersey, out in New Jersey. Our office is in Manhattan.
Victor, after 30 years. So, and it just led to New Jersey. So I'm glad that you're there, but anyway, I got to go. It's 2:00. So thank you so much. We'll talk offline though, Victor, but right. Thank you so much for joining On Air with Russell Hotels. That was show number 81. Just let's get ready for show number 82. So you guys take care. Have a great week. It's Taco Tuesday somewhere. So make sure you have tacos with somebody. And then if you could
go out and vote.
Yeah. I was going to say that, Victor, thank you. And go out and vote as well. So, and don't listen to the TV and say, oh, this person won or that person won. No, just continue to go out and vote.
Get on the map.
Exactly. So you guys take care. Thanks again. Peace.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks, Victor.
Thank you for joining On Air with Russell of Hotels. Please tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. as we talk to other hospitality professionals. Your feedback is important. Email Russell at russell@russellofhotels.com with any questions or suggestions. Until next time, try not to be a person of success, rather become a person of value.